Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. Today we have an author interview with Jenny Holiday. Jenny wrote one of the favorite series in 2019, which is The Bridesmaid Behaving Badly. If you're looking for a series that combines friendships, weddings, and romance, this series is just for you. Today, Jenny's launching a brand new series set in a lake town in Canada. Mermaid Inn is the first in the series, and it's a second-chance romance set in a quirky town that will remind you of Gilmore Girls. In this interview, we chat about Jenny's writing process, her books, and around the book recommendations. Now let's get to the interview. Hi, Jenny. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast.
Hi, Laura. Thank you for having me.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I write primarily romantic comedies, and although I have written a lot of other stuff as well, but these days it's rom-coms, and I live in southwestern Ontario, not too far from Toronto with my family, and I'm actually a pretty boring person in real life, I think.
You probably are not. You just have your own set of way of doing things, so... It's awesome. So I love that your books are set in Canada, by the way. It's like,
oh, thank you.
Like, I want to live in Canada, so it just basically makes me like, oh, this sounds amazing. So thank you for setting them where you live.
Well, and my new series is, everyone's like, oh, it's a beach series. I'm like, it's a beach series in Canada, because most people don't think about Canada having beaches.
But. Yeah, I didn't think about it. And then I was like, wait, it's in Canada.
Yeah.
This is amazing. So awesome. So based on your bio, you like to throw theme parties. So what's your favorite theme party that you've done so far?
Well, I have a friend who, I don't even really know how it started, but we got into... sort of theme parties. And because, as an aside, I just think like theme parties are wasted on kids. They don't care. And then you're supposed to like grow up and grow out of silliness. And I just think, I don't know, we should embrace opportunities to dress up and be silly. So the best one, and like by far the best one we ever did, was we called it the Miss Havisham Party. So if people don't know Miss Havisham, she's a character from Dickens' Great Expectations. And she is a spinster who was, so we're talking like Victorian era here. She was a spinster who was left at the altar, or she was left at the altar, became a spinster, and she shut herself up in her mansion and never changed out of her wedding dress, never did anything with her wedding cake, and she just lives in this sort of splendorous decay, almost like a ghostly figure. But she is bitter and hates everybody and ruins her niece that she's the guardian to's life, basically. So I had a friend who got a big promotion at work and turned 45 around the same time, and somehow I don't even know how we arrived on this, but we got the idea that to celebrate this, we would have a Miss Havisham party, which was also a little bit tied to, you know, the last few years have been kind of, you know, with the Me Too movement, and we've all sort of become a little bit angrier, I would say, about the treatment of women in this world. So anyway, we all dressed up in, as well as we could, Victorian bride outfits, and decorated with cobwebs, and put on like scary makeup, and baked a cake and let it sit for a week before we served it, stuff like that.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Served when we, you know, we served our drinks and teacups, and it was a good time.
I can imagine. That sounds like amazing. That sounds like so much fun. So I'm assuming you had a lot of fun.
Yes, we did. And we, you know, we also had a lot of wine, which made it extra fun. And
Perfect. I love it. So what inspired you to become a writer?
I don't know that there was any one thing. I have actually, I had a whole career as a writer before I took up writing romance. Like I had my day jobs were always as writers, mostly in nonprofit settings. Mm-hmm. So I always did it. It was just always what I did to make money. Mm-hmm. And I, at some point, I was a latecomer to romance. So I didn't read my first romance novel till I was probably in my early 30s. Mm-hmm. And I, like many people, when you discover them, I started inhaling them. Mm-hmm. And I think at one point I just thought, hey, I should try to do this. How hard can it be? Ha 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 ha. Turned out it was actually really hard. But it was sort of a natural progression from just this thing, writing, that I had always been doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I discovered romance later on in life, and I can tell you, I started inhaling them once I discovered the genre. I have no interest in writing because I know it's hard, but I know it's one of those things where it's like once you discover, you want to be immersed in it.
Well, and isn't it? It's interesting because you don't run across that many people who discovered it later in life, because most people, it seems like the story is, you know, I read my grandmother's Harlequins, or yeah, I stole, you know, books from my mom. So it's nice to meet a fellow late bloomer to romance.
Yeah, I discovered in 2016.
Oh, wow.
So it's like really recently. And then I read like 300 books. It was like ridiculous.
That's the nice thing about discovering it when you're an adult is you can read what you want. You don't just have to steal books from your relatives.
Yeah, I didn't have to steal books from my relatives. I just actually give my books to my mom now. I'm like, you need to read this, you know? But yeah, it's kind of fun, like just going to backlist, going to books that were written in the 90s or the 2000s, and then, you know, discovering recent books, and then it's just great. I love genre. I love that there's such a diversity within the genre and that there's enough to read.
So what made you, now I'm going to turn around and interview you. What made, what, how did you discover romance, or what, did you stumble on it or?
No, I started reading consistently in 2016. I started with YA, and someone told me about YouTube videos where they have book recommendations. And so I started watching those, and I just got bored, and I discovered something called New Adult.
Right.
Which is the college age era, which is a little older than young adult novels, but there's like steamy.
Right.
And I binge on those books. And from there, I started discovering authors. And it was like a snowball effect. Like, I just discovered one trope and then another, and then I'll just read all their backlist. And I had a job in my life where actually at the time I was working in a place where I didn't have much to do, so I can read in my Kindle. I read in my phone.
Right.
So I was devouring a book a day. It was just great. I no longer have that job. I'm looking for a job like that now. That would be ideal. But I love it. I think once I got that, then it became my joy. And so this year I started reading a lot of hype up books, and that's where I realized that I hit a place where it just was not in alignment. Like, I actually like romance. I like series of like authors who just write straight up romance. And so that's where an intention for 2020 is to go back to it. Like, your books got me out of book slump because I was like reading all these like hype up literary fiction. And I was like, yeah, that's not for me. I need romance. I need rom-coms. I need romantic suspense. I need historical, like just any of it. Just
over
after. Yeah. So that's my story about romance.
Nice. I like it.
Yeah. So what was your journey to get your first book published?
Well, it was probably kind of your typical story. I actually wrote a book that was really bad, like many people do. Mm-hmm. And that book, you know, I thought it was great, but that book will never see the light of day. So that was like kind of my first kick at the can, was writing a book that kind of taught me how to write a book or how not to write a book. Mm-hmm. And the next book that I wrote I started in a historical romance. That's what I started mm-hmm. reading, and that's what I started writing.
Okay.
I haven't done that for years, but I still read it, but I haven't written it for years, but that was a historical. And that book, was the book that I got my agent with.
Okay.
And then, it took a while, but she eventually sold it. And that was it. That was that.
That's awesome.
And I mean, it took me years to write that first book. It definitely was something I labored over for a long time, but, that was it.
That's awesome. And how was the transition to contemporary romance? Because that's where you're writing, right? You're writing rom-coms. So how was that transition?
Well, I was writing Regency because that's what I started reading. And I never in a million years would have ever imagined that I would write contemporary. I hadn't even really, you know, it was a while before I even started reading contemporary. But at the time that we were on the market with my historicals, there was kind of a slump in, you know, how all the genres kind of go through, you know, people want vampires and now they don't want vampires. There was kind of a slump in historical, and they did eventually sell, but it took a while. And I remember quite clearly having a conversation with my agent, and she said, you know, would you ever consider writing contemporary? And we talked about a few different lines, and I was like, no, that's, you're talking crazy. I can't do that. Like, that's bananas. And I hung up the phone, like, you know, saying, no, I'm never going to do that. And then I sat down and wrote, my first contemporary, which was actually the first book that was published. So I actually, even though I sold historicals first, I subsequently sold some contemporaries, and they just happened to be published first. So, but yeah, and she, it was her idea, and I thought that it was bananas. And then I actually did it and realized how much easier it is to write a contemporary than it is to write a historical. And they, you know, they sold better, and they just sort of seemed to be more of a natural fit for me once I got over that hump of, yes, I can write in something besides the 19th century.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said about contemporaries. Like, there's the variety of it. There's the flexibility that you may not find it in historicals when you're set in a modern Regency era and your expectations and the reader's expecting something. I think with contemporaries, you're just like, the story can lead you wherever it leads you.
Yeah. Well, and from a writing point of view, there's so much less research, and you don't have to think about, like, is this historically appropriate and all that stuff. Yeah. How long was it going to take them to get from A to B in their endless carriage ride? And how do I deal with that? And,
yeah, I can imagine to think about, like, the modern necessities, you don't have to think about, like, what they're wearing and, like, the specific things they're eating and how they're living, you know, contemporary is like, that's just your mother era, you know, there's electricity, there's internet, you can do dating sites.
You can swear.
Yeah, you can. So I can imagine there's a freedom there. So that's awesome. So how do you organize yourself as a writer?
I am pretty low tech. I mean, I write it on a computer, obviously, but I just write in Word. I don't use, I have nothing against any like Scrivener or anything like that, but I just kind of like open a document and write the book from start to finish. Mm-hmm. And then I have a separate document that's like an Excel spreadsheet that keeps track of, as I go, I keep track of the scenes that I'm writing. And then that document kind of becomes like my table of contents, so I can go back to it when I'm doing edits and rearrange stuff. But that's pretty much it. And also pen and paper. Like each book has a notebook that I jot stuff down on. Mm-hmm. And that's and then I go back to it and cross stuff out when I've dealt with it. And by the end, hopefully I have a notebook full of crossed out scribblings, and then I know I'm done.
I love it. And do you follow that line, or do you see where the story leads? Yeah.
A little bit of both. Okay. It kind of depends on the book. The true honest answer is that when you're selling a series to a publisher, the first book is usually there's an extremely detailed synopsis for the first book, but the subsequent books may just be paragraph blurbs. So I do find that if I'm writing the first book in a series that I've had to sell to a publisher, it's usually very well outlined, and actually it's easier to write as a result. So you could ask yourself, why don't I do this for all my books? And I do ask myself why I don't do that for all my books. But if I'm left to my own devices, obviously it's going to end happily ever after, but I kind of have an idea of the dark moment in the book, the black moment, and how it's going to get resolved. And I may have either certain plot points or certain emotional points or scenes that I know I'm going to, I need, but I don't necessarily have the whole thing outlined before I start.
Which is fine. It's like, I think you have to figure out what works for you. So every person has their own style, you know, whether it's outlining, whether it's just like seeing where the story leads to, or just bullet points, or saying, I think this is where it's going to go. But, you know, you don't know when they meet the characters, they might tell you something different.
Yeah. And I find that I kind of barf out a not great first draft usually. And I think my strength is in revising, and it's what I enjoy more than writing. So I tend to just kind of plow through the first draft as fast as I can, which is usually not very fast. But so the real craft for me, it's not, everyone's not like this, comes in the revision stage.
And how many revisions do you go through?
I don't really think of it as, I know most people talk about like, I do X many drafts. To me, it's not even, there's not boundaries around like, this is the first draft, this is the second draft. It's almost like it just keeps accreting until it's done. So I don't necessarily go straight through it X many times. You know, I kind of fiddle with different parts, and doing something in one place makes me realize I need to go to another place and do something. But the kind of qualitative answer is a lot. Like I do a lot of revising before it, like on my own before I turn a book in.
And then it goes through a couple rounds with your editor and all the other bad editors.
Yeah. I have, one person, shout out to Sandra Owens, who writes romantic suspense and small town contemporary. She's an old friend and she reads everything that I write, but after I've done 20 rounds with it, and then depending on the book, I may have other friends look at it. So it definitely gets a lot of work, both just me and other people's eyeballs on it before I turn it in. I'm a little bit obsessive about trying to turn it in something that is as good as I can get it.
That's amazing. So let's talk about Mermaid Inn. This is a Star Avenue series, and it's full of quirky characters in the lovely lakeside town in Canada, which I love. What was the source of inspiration?
The actual town. So I live not too far. I live not too far from Lake Huron and Lake Erie. I live kind of smack in the middle, but along the sort of southwestern Ontario coast of Lake Huron, there are a lot of towns that I love, and I just thought it would be fun to set something in one of them. And I actually, the funny thing about the series is I had this idea, and I kind of worked up some thoughts on it years ago and put it away, and because then my contemporaries up until now have been set in big cities. Dusted it off this last time around and just couldn't kind of shake the idea of these towns on the Great Lakes.
Yeah, I love the town. I love the people in the town. Like, I love the sort of the moonflowers and like the traditions, the whole aspect of the party when the tourists are gone, when they have the town party. I love like all the different things about the town. Like, it just reminded me about watching Gilmore Girls. Like, it was that's a spirit that I got when I was reading this book.
Yes, I'm glad that you, because I mean, I wasn't totally going for Gilmore Girls on purpose, but the idea of a town like that. And I also, what I should have said is, in beach towns, one of the things that I think is really interesting is, and I'm not local, but I do go to them in the winter, for example, is the sort of seasonal rhythm, is that you have all these people in the town in the summer, and then it shrinks down and almost bunkers down against the winter, and lots of the businesses close down. So I like to kind of play with the idea of locals versus tourists. And we have, you know, characters who are all of the above, but
I love it. So what can we expect of the series?
I think in some ways what you can expect is more of the same, is sort of romantic comedies that are, I think, I'm not going to say heavy, but my books often deal with sort of like a more of an emotional component than you might expect from a rom-com. So that's there. And what we have is three separate love stories centered around three friends who are guys. So in my last book, it was bridesmaids were the girls, but in this, the heroes are all determined to stay single, but you know how that works out in a romance novel.
Yeah, I know. It's like, oh, yeah. Shucks, I'm going to fall in love.
Yeah, and what I hope, and this is not my idea. I heard Jen Reed's Romance. Do you know her?
Yeah.
She and Faded Mates. I was listening to a Faded Mates podcast about small town romance, and she said something that stuck with me. She said, the best small town romances have a sort of a feeling of expansiveness about them. Mm. And, you know, that you're living in this town where people are rooting for you, which, you know, may or may not actually be realistic as to what small towns are like. That's a whole other discussion. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of what she put to words what I was sort of going for, was the idea that you're living in a place that's rooting for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like this, especially this town, everyone's rooting for that. And we got the matchmakers, we got the senior citizens who are just like getting them all together. We got the people who want to just see love and yeah. see people happy. So this is like rooting for this love story to have it.
Right. That's kind of what I was going for. And was the sort of like, you know, we're meddling, but we're meddling for your own good.
Yeah. Yeah.
The town is mobilizing on your behalf.
They are. They're better than Tinder. They're better
yeah.
than they're so good about it. So I love it. So Eva's the main character of Marmaiden, and she mm-hmm. has been avoiding the town for 10 years, but an inheritance brings her back to town. She has a stipulation that she has to stay there for a year. What was the reason why? I know it's like so she can be in the town for a year, but like how is it inheritance leaving her dog behind? Because she could just say, I don't want to have this building and then I can just stick in my dog. Like what was the reason why we had to bring Eve back to the town after 10 years?
Well, I mean, you kind of hit on it. Like in a way, it's a romance novel device that, you know, oh, you've inherited this place, but you can't sell it for a year because she has to kind of be there initially against her will. I mean, she doesn't mm-hmm. have to, but the way that I've conceived the story is that she left this town 10 years ago, never looked back, never mm-hmm. imagined coming back. But forces beyond her control have landed her back in town. As to, like, you know, why does she stay the year? It's kind of a mixture of trying to honor her. She inherits this inn from her great aunt, who she spent summers with as a child. And it's, you know, it's mainly wanting to honor her aunt's wishes, which is that she would spend a year in the town. But, you know, just to make it a little more realistic, I also have the, like, she's out of money. If she runs the inn, she can sell it.
Yeah, I think it was kind of like fun to see. And then to see the note at the end of like, no, you can have left it. You can quit it.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, oh, shucks, you're supposed to stay. I think you were meant to stay here and just kind of like see it. Yeah. And then seeing her relationship with Sawyer, who that was the reason why she left, going back to him and then seeing he has to rubble to get her back. That was actually interesting to see, you know, Sawyer, you know, making effort. And trying to, even though he pushed Eve away from the town 10 years ago.
Yeah, small town romance is actually kind of tough. Like, the reason I wrote this book is I just kind of had this visual image of this woman suddenly back in town. And like the kernel of the book was not just that, but that she's in the inn. And it's completely overwhelming. Like, it's full of all this crap and she just is falling apart and she's totally overwhelmed. Like, that was kind of my visual idea of the start of the book. So it has to be a second chance romance, basically, if you want that set up. I mean, it doesn't have to be, but she's back in town. The obvious thing is that she's going to run into somebody that she used to know. But second chance romance, I think, is tricky. It's, to be honest, it's not my favorite as a reader. I'm doing a really good job selling my book here, aren't I? Come read this book that's full of this trope that I hate. But I think it's hard because I think you need to make sure that whatever caused the rift initially is strong enough to have caused a rift, but also it has to be something that you can rehabilitate. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so he has to be kind of a jerk, but not so much of a jerk that he's unredeemable.
Yeah.
So that was actually my big struggle with this book, you know. So I will leave it to readers to see if that fine line was achieved. But
I think it was achieved. I think I love the fact that you pointed out the teenage relationships, which most of the time you put them in a pedestal. Like, this was not perfect. Like, there was no perfection in that teenage relationship. And so when they were rebuilding the relationship, it needed to be in a more mature way, in a more, like, just more conscious about the relationship, about communication, just being present to each other. I think, you know, the early infatuation, which tends to be when you read Second Transformers, the infatuation of the teenage relationship was like, it was amazing, I fell in love with you, and it's like, it's all perfect, and then we work off, and then you just come back together. Like, here, there's a purpose why they were no longer together, and then they're coming back together and trying to make it, you know, to seem that it can be a happily ever after, not just a happy for now.
Right. And the book is, I mean, it's not a retelling by any stretch of the imagination, but it's somewhat loosely based on The Little Mermaid. Mm-hmm. Elements of the actual original fairy tale, which mm-hmm. does not end happily, and the sort of Disney version that we're all familiar with.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's the song, and the whole point of the Disney version is both of the versions is that she gives up her voice. She loses her mm-hmm. voice. So the kind of arc that she has to go through independently of her relationship with Sawyer is that she is finding her voice. So that's what I was trying to do with her, is that she has to learn how to get what she wants and advocate for herself. So I think you're right that teenage relationships, you know, maybe, you know, they're rarely perfect. They rarely last
mm-hmm.
because people change. Mm-hmm. But then the trick is, they, you know, they loved each other, and that love comes back pretty quickly, though they both try to push it away.
Mm-hmm.
Is that love is still there, but how have they changed in order to make it work this time?
Mm-hmm.
And so for her, it's, she's learned how to ask for what she wants and to mm-hmm. advocate for herself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think for Sawyer, and then just to surrender and just let go of the control. I think for him,
right.
Like, he's been holding on to control by, like, raising his sister, being the chief, doing all those different things. And to realize that in this relationship, he's not going to control her. He has to let her just be. So.
He can't cut. Yes. He's trying to protect everybody and control everything. Not in a bad way, but he's got so, and he objectively had a lot of responsibility fall on him at a young age.
Mm-hmm.
But then he has to learn that he's not responsible elementally for her, you know,
mm-hmm.
that he can love her, but she's responsible for herself.
So this book is from a quirky secondary character, such as the elderly squad, who's been meddling in the affairs of most of the town. So which one are some of your favorite secondary characters that you've written into the story?
I think my favorite is Pearl, who is a baker. She owns mm-hmm. she owns a pie shop called Pie with Pearl.
Mm-hmm.
And fun fact, because you read the Bridesmaids books, I originally named her Pia, P-I-A, Pie with mm-hmm. Pia, because it's like one letter different. And then my editor pointed out that I had Gia in the Bridesmaids series. And if you read the novella, Merrily Ever After, there's a baby born in that whose name is Mia, M-I-A. And she had to be Mia for reasons that made sense in the book. And so we made a little joke about, oh, we have Gia and Mia. And then I was doing this book and my editor was like, are you kidding me? You can't have Pia after Gia and Mia. And I was like, dang it.
Oh.
It hadn't even occurred to me. I just forgot. I don't know.
Oh.
So anyway, Pearl was her new name, but I still think of her as Pia.
Okay.
Is kind of she's an elderly baker, but she's also a championship Fortnite gamer.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of is having a secret affair with the lift bridge operator, but she won't admit to it. And I just like her.
Yeah, I love her story. I love the way she just came back and the way she was like, she'll come to me and she's like, I got a pie for you.
Yeah, like, she just does what she wants. And
yeah, like, no apology. She's like, here I am. You know, I love that. I love the fact that the elderly squad were just like so present to it, and they were so loving, but at the same time so meddling, that it makes it so quirky.
Yeah, good. I'm glad.
So, what can we expect about Jake's book?
Oh, Jake's book. Jake's book is next. It's called Paradise Cove. And Jake is, so Paradise Cove is my, you know, some books that you write, I mean, you love all your books, but some books you really love. And Paradise Cove, is my favorite book I've ever written. I think it's, I mean, I don't know, like, I joke that, like, thankfully my own opinions about a book usually have no correlation with either how well it sells or how well it's reviewed. But I love Jake's book. Jake is wounded. He is deeply wounded. And almost mute. He never talks. He's sort of a silent presence in this book. And he lives in a little cottage on the beach by himself where he's sort of holed up with his heartbreak. And I won't say too much about why, because that kind of becomes important in the book, but he gets falls in to helping the new town doctor, who's somebody we haven't met yet, who comes, moves to town in the second book, kind of get her clinic set up. And then guess what happens?
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. So I got a question. Is Maya getting a book? Well, I know you mentioned... Okay.
So book three is Maya, and you can probably tell it's going to be Law who runs the bar. That's an enemies to lovers book. So I love them. They are always, you're going to see them snip at each other through book two, like you did through book one. And then in book three, they'll finally have it out.
Yeah, I saw her coming. I was like, she's getting a book. I was like, oh my gosh, it's enemies to lovers, which is like my favorite trope. So I was like, I'm eagerly waiting for her book.
It's my favorite too, for sure.
Yeah, I just love when they hate each other, when they bicker, when they complain about each other, and then they realize they fall in love. It's just fabulous.
Well, and I think as a craft thing, I think enemies to lovers is a nice trope to do toward the end of a series because you can really build up to it.
Yes, that is so true. Because you can build it up over time. You can start seeing why they hate each other. It's not like this. You can actually build it in under time, and then you don't need to go into the loss. There's like they hate it for 1 minute, and then 2 minutes later they love each other.
So right, and you can establish like the way they banter, and you can sort of establish everyone else as like, oh, well, you two just get on with it already. So that, you know, ideally you kind of create some anticipation.
Yes. Well, I'm eagerly anticipating the rest of the series. I think it's just going to be, it just builds up on each other. So I feel like it's just going to be one great book after the other, which is perfect. So I'm sad that they're not all out right now. So I had to wait.
I'm laughing kind of maniacally because they're not done yet.
I know. Most of the time they're not. And as a reader, it's like eagerly awaiting for like, what's the next book? What's the next book? So it is okay. So, now let's get to round of book recommendations. So this is an opportunity for you to share with our audience what they should read next. So what is your favorite genre?
Romance, for sure. That's probably not a surprise.
No.
contemporary romance, I guess.
Okay. And who's your favorite author? Or who are your go-to authors?
Well, this is a hard one. But I think if I had to pick one kind of go-to romance author, it would be Molly O'Keefe, who also writes as M. O'Keefe.
Okay.
Who also writes as Molly Fader.
Okay.
And Molly doesn't really write, you know how sometimes you think, oh, I don't like this trope or I don't like this subgenre, but then there'll be somebody who writes that trope and subgenre and it's your favorite book. Molly writes lots of different stuff. That's part of why she amazes me. She's got this huge range, women's fiction, contemporary romance, you know, kind of dark romance, rom-coms. But her books, particularly her Everything I Left Unsaid series, just, it's one of there's those books where you just put it down and you just feel like somebody like ripped your heart out and mushed it up and stuck it back in your chest, you know? Mm-hmm. She just blows me away. She's a master.
Okay, I'm just buying the book. But I love it. So what are your top three favorite books of all time?
Favorite books of all time. Well, I guess I should include a book by Molly because I just made that little speech. The best book by her, in my opinion, and one of the best romance novels we have in our genre is called Burn Down the Night. And it's very suspense. It's not suspense, but it's like very edge of your seat, dark. I'm not giving anything away by saying, because this happens like within the first few pages, the heroine takes the hero hostage. So it starts with a bang, literally. And it slayed me, that book. Okay, so that's one. You asked for three. You know, I think I said I discovered romance late, and I discovered romance late. But I think the first romance novel I ever read without it really being labeled a romance novel was a book called 15 by Beverly Cleary. And it was really old when I read it as a kid. So this is a YA novel, and I should have looked it up, but it's probably written in the late 60s. So it's very old fashioned, and I haven't read it since I was a kid. So I don't have any idea if it stands up, and I don't want to go back and read it because I don't want to be heartbroken when it turns out that.
Yeah.
But it was, I read that book so many times. It's just like a little kind of innocent YA romance about a girl named Jane and a boy named Stan. And I think it's a special place in my heart because it was kind of like my first romance. And what's my third favorite book of all time? I think I'm going to go with, it's not a romance novel, but I think my favorite non-romance novel and a book that made a huge impression on me is The Hours by Michael Cunningham. It's a lit fic. I don't do a lot of lit fic. Really do very little except for when I'm forced to for my book club. But that was a great one.
So what has been a book you read this year that you love?
So I think the book that I enjoyed the most this year, I was called How to Belong with a Billionaire by Alexis Hall. And part of the reason that I loved it so much was the anticipation of it. It was the third book in a series. And the first two came out like a couple years ago. And I don't know what the story behind it is, but this third one was delayed by several years. So I was dying for this book. And they're on cliffhangers. I mean, we know it's all going to work out in the end, but books one and two are cliffhangers. So I was dying for the last book. It's a series. First book is called How to Bang a Billionaire. And the second book is called How to Blow It with a Billionaire. And they're male-male romance, kind of half homage, half satire of 50 Shades of Grey. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've read any Alexis Hall, but
no.
He is just, I think, one of the, in terms of actual prose, like actual writing, is one of the best we have in romance. So that's just a gorgeous series. It's funny, but it's kind of heartbreaking. It's just, it's got everything. So that last book finally came out this year, and it did not disappoint.
I love it. Well, it turns out that I do have How to Bang a Billionaire, so I think I'm going to read it next.
Oh, read it.
Yeah, I'm reading right now the Kennedy Ryan duet.
Yep.
And then I'm just going to read that afterwards.
Okay, great. Yeah, well, let me know what you think. It's something. And I never read 50 Shades, so I can't really speak how it echoes it, but it has the sort of basic setup of the billionaire guy and the younger student type.
Okay. Yeah, like 50 Shades was an interesting experience. I was like, I don't think I can, it's romance, but I feel like it wasn't like my first foray in romance. I think it was just one of those read books that I read because everyone was reading them.
Yeah.
And my boss, like, who is a male boss, he read it. Yeah. And it was like, I don't know, I feel comfortable talking to you about this book. but it was one of those books, I think, then after that, I read a lot of more BDSM, more student, billionaire relationship, and then I dive into more of that genre. Yeah. Well, tell us where you can find you online.
You can find, my website's jennyholiday.com. As for social media, I am on Twitter mostly. Twitter is sort of my natural home on social media. It's at Jenny Holly, Holi. I'm also on Instagram, less often, but more Instagram stories is kind of my jam. And I have a Facebook reader group that is a joint reader group with fellow Canadian rom-com writers, Jackie Lau and R. Heron, who both live in Toronto and write Toronto or Canada set romantic comedies. So we have a joint Facebook group that's called Northern Heat. So if you search groups, Northern Heat.
Love it. I think I'm going to join because I'm always
good.
Books to have in Canada.
Excellent.
I think there's like a unique market, you know, there needs to be more books set in Canada, especially with the current political climate. I'm like, I just want to move. So That's his Spotify.
Yeah, we talk about books, but we kind of like our things have evolved into being donuts and Keanu Reeves. Those are kind of like two topics of the group.
I love it. Well, thank you, Jenny, for being on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always in the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.